The Mirage of Speed, A Bonneville Betrayal, Chapter 1, The Setting. On August 17, 2016, Calvert Shepherd, a 42-year-old freelance photojournalist hailing from the quiet small town of Von Ohr, Tennessee, population just over 1,500, nestled along the Tellico Lake in the foothills of the Smoky Mountains, embarked on his latest assignment. His editor gave him several choices, but since he wanted to stay stateside for a while, he elected to travel to Utah. Fresh off a flight from Knoxville to Salt Lake City International, he rented a nondescript sedan at the airport and hit Interstate 80 westbound, bound for the high-tension spectacle of Bonneville Speed Week. This annual event on the Bonneville Salt Flats, about 120 miles west of Salt Lake City, attracted adrenaline-fueled speed demons from around the globe. The air crackled with raw energy and unbridled ambition as determined participants, racers, engineers, mechanics, and enthusiasts alike, pushed custom-built hot rods, streamliners, and motorcycles to supersonic limits on the vast crystalline expanse. After 2 years of cancellations due to poor salt conditions, 2016 had brought perfect racing weather, and the flats were alive with record attempts on multiple courses. Calvert, with his southern drawl and a portfolio built on capturing raw Americana, from back road drag races in Tennessee to international industrial espionage, was looking for a balance of excitement, fun, and interesting people without all the hidden dangers of past assignments. He stopped along a desolate highway off the interstate around 4:49 p.m. to snap what he thought was an atmospheric prelude, the Jordan Surplus Canal's glassy surface mirroring a procession of weathered power poles against the hazy Stansbury Mountains. The canal, a utilitarian drainage vein, emptying into the Great Salt Lake, flanked by rocky levees and sparse desert vegetation, symbolized the eerie calm before the speedway's chaos. The highly sponsored race teams, both big and small, filled the desert on the Nevada side with colorful tents, banners, and dressed-out rigs. Sponsor staff, team members and fans, drawn by the neon allure of Wendover's casinos straddling the Utah-Nevada line, based themselves there for the event, gambling away downtime between daily record attempts. Calvert planned to join them, not to gamble, but to gather material for his article. However, his detour photo would soon thrust him into a nightmare far from Von Ohr's serene hills and lake shores. Chapter 2. The Discovery. Calvert Shepherd pulled into Wendover around 7 p.m. the neon glow of the casinos cutting through the desert dusk like a siren's call. He checked into his room at the Peppermill Casino Hotel, a bustling hive for the Bonneville crowd, racers, mechanics, and hangers-on, blowing off steam at the slots or chowing down on overpriced buffets or partaking of mixed drinks and beer in the casino restaurants and lounges. The familiar sounds echoing from dinging slot machines was tempting, but Calvert had his mind on work. He unpacked his laptop, eager to sift through the day's shots from his drive west. Around 8:30 p.m., he opened the file from the canal stop, a moody panorama of the Jordan Surplus Canal, with its still waters mirroring those endless power poles against the hazy mountains. Zooming in for a closer look, he spotted something off in the reflection, a blurred, elongated shape tangled in a pole shadow. He looked at it for a moment, thinking, then muttered, "Nah, no way, it's probably just driftwood piled up, or wrecked debris." Calvert removed his glasses, wiped the lens, put them back on, and studied the photo. But curiosity gnawed at him. He cranked up the contrast in his editing software, zoomed in, and there it was, limbs splayed at unnatural angles, unmistakably human. His journalist instincts kicked in, bringing the possibility of an unexpected twist to his trip. He knew what needed to be done: contact the local authorities and report what he thinks is real. On the other hand, he knows that a phone call without real proof is risky for a journalist, especially one from out of town. His self-protecting instincts were starting to hit on all cylinders. "This ain't right to just sit here," he said aloud, heart picking up pace. Grabbing his phone and his gear, he headed out the door. He had to return to the exact location in the photo and see for himself if the image indeed held a secret. Calvert made the roughly 100 miles back to the canal in an hour and a half. He got out of his car with his camera, an enlarged photo of the scene on his laptop, and a flashlight. He walked down the embankment to start the search. It didn't take long to locate the partially submerged body next to one of the poles. He zoomed in and took several pictures from different angles along the bank. When he got back to his car, he dialed the 2L County Sheriff's Office. At 10:45 p.m., the call went through. 2L County Sheriff's Office, the dispatcher answered, her voice crisp over the line. How can I help you? My name's Calvert Shepard. I'm a photojournalist out of Tennessee. I'm in Wendover covering the Speed Week, but I think I got something you folks need to come see. Sir, if you are in Wendover, that's in Nevada. It's out of our jurisdiction. You need to contact local authorities. Yes, I know that, but let me explain. I took a picture earlier today off I-80, about 20 miles west of Salt Lake, Jordan Surplus Canal, I believe it's called. Yes, I know the canal, the dispatcher said. You mentioned a picture. What about it? I copied the photo to my laptop, and when I zoomed in, I noticed, well, it looks like a body in the water. Mr. Shepard, are you claiming you took a picture of a body in the canal? Yes, I've got GPS coordinates from the photo metadata, 40.737 latitude minus 112.938 longitude. At first, I thought this might be nothing, but I went back to the canal. It sure looks like it warrants a closer look. The dispatcher paused, then went professional. Sir, stay on the line. I'm dispatching units now. You said you're a journalist? Any chance you can send a digital copy of that photo to our office? I'm already attaching it to an email, sending it to the email address on your site, Calvert replied, fingers flying over his keyboard. And listen, I'm staying here until an officer shows up. I will be standing at the front of my car with my ID in hand where they can see both hands clearly. My laptop and camera will be on the hood. Tell your guys I'm unarmed. Mr. Shepard, we advise civilians to stay clear for safety. I understand, ma'am, but if it's a story, I'm already in it. He hung up, grabbed his camera bag and laptop, placed them on the hood in plain sight, and stood holding his ID for what was beginning to feel like an eternity under the starlit sky. Around 11 p.m., Calvert could hear sirens and see flashing blue lights off in the distance. In just a few minutes, the first sheriff's deputies were on the scene and getting out of their cars with weapons drawn. Calvert raised his hands, holding only his ID, and said, "Officers, I am Calvert Shepard. I am the one that called." "Keep your hands up," one officer said loudly as they advanced toward him. While one officer held his weapon on Calvert, the other one took his ID. "Turn around, place your hands on the hood, and spread your legs," the first officer said before he frisked him. "I'm not armed." "Don't move. I'll be right back." He holstered his weapon and walked to his car. It only took a couple of minutes until the officer returned with Calvert's ID. He checks out. "Frank, he's a journalist out of Tennessee. Here you go, Mr. Shepard. My apologies," he said while handing back the ID. "Now, what's this about a body in a photo?" Calvert raised the screen on his laptop and said, "Here, let me show you the photo and then take you to the body." With both officers looking on, Calvert zoomed in on the body. He turned and pointed. "It's about 20 yards up along the canal bank. Come, I'll show you," he said, turning to walk with flashlight in hand. The two officers followed Calvert along the canal bank, shining their flashlights down on the water's dark surface as they walked. Calvert stopped and turned his flashlight beam toward a power pole jetting out of the dark water about 3 feet from the bank. As he brought the beam down the pole, he stopped when it caught the partially submerged body, face down in the water. Scene was eerie in the dark, the water's surface now a black mirror, broken only by the flashlight beams slicing through the night, outlining what lay before them. A deputy approached the water's edge, his flashlight trained on the mass. He reached for his shoulder mic and clicked. "Mary, this is Officer Hicks. We have a body. Better call Dr. Ellis and get his team down here." "Okay, Hank. So I guess the guy was right?" "Yeah. It appears that way." The two deputies turned and walked up the bank to the gravel road that runs along the canal. Calvert followed as the deputies walked back to the cruisers. Deputy Hicks took crime scene tape from his car and said, "Come on, Frank, let's go cording off the area. Mr. Shepard, you stay with your vehicle and let us do our job." Calvert nodded, his southern drawl steady despite the chill in the air. "No problem, officer. I ain't here to step on any toes. I'm just a fellow who snapped the photo that brought y'all out. If there's any way my photo can help, just holler." The deputy eyed him suspiciously but nodded. "Stay behind the tape. The coroner's en route. It's going to get busy. We don't need you in the way. By 1 a.m. on August 18th, the coroner, Dr. Gabe Ellis, a wiry man in his 50s with wire-rimmed glasses and a no-nonsense demeanor, arrived with his forensic team. The forensic van parked on the gravel road above the body. The medical examiner parked, got out, and walked toward the scene, stopping near Calvert. "Are you the guy who called this in?" "Yeah, that's me. Mind if I ask you a question?" "I don't mind," Calvert said, stepping away from his car, extending his hand. "I'm Calvert Shepherd." "Dr. Ellis," he said as he shook his hand. "Mr. Shepherd, I just want to know when you took the photo." "At 4:49 p.m. yesterday." "Say, Dr. Ellis, do you mind if I stick around? I'm a photojournalist here covering the races, but this is something else." "That's not up to me. Talk to the officer. Now stay behind the tape. Let us do our job." They set up under portable lights, the hum of generators mixing with the distant rumble of big trucks on I-80. Dr. Ellis knelt by the water's edge, peering at the shape just below the surface. "All right, folks," Dr. Ellis called out to his team. "The water's shallow enough to see it from here. No need for a full dive yet. Looks like it's snagged near the bank. We'll wait for dawn to pull it out of the water. In the meantime, I'll start a preliminary. The rest of you start your search for anything. Tell the story for the victim." Calvert, hovering at the perimeter with his camera, caught snippets of conversation. One of the EMTs on scene, a burly guy named Robert Deano, paced nearby. Deano worked part-time at the Bonneville Salt Flat Speedway during Speed Week, patching up crash victims and heatstroke cases. He glanced at the water and froze. "Wait a damn minute," Deano muttered, stepping closer. "That jacket, the hair, holy shit, that's Eliana. Eliana Vasquez." Dr. Ellis turned sharply. "You know her?" "Yeah, Doc, she's with the Salt Phantom team. Big shot aerodynamicist out of Salt Lake City. I saw her just yesterday at a pre-race briefing in Wendover. What the hell happened?" "Easy, Robert," Dr. Ellis said, waving him back. "We'll confirm ID and COD once we recover her. But if you're right, this just got a lot more complicated." As sunrise crested the Stansbury Mountains, painting the canal in golden hues, the first responders launched a small recovery boat. Using long poles, they gently maneuvered the body from the shallow waters near the bank. No divers required for the extraction, though a team suited up later to scour the canal bed for evidence. The body, sodden and pale, was laid on a tarp. Eliana Vasquez, 38, was renowned for her groundbreaking designs that shaved seconds off land speed records. Robert Deano confirmed it immediately, his voice thick. "Yeah, that's her. God, what a waste. She was a genius with those airfoils." At 5:30 a.m., Dr. Ellis knelt by the victim's body to complete his preliminary exam, gloved hands probing carefully. He announced as he worked, "No complete rigor yet. Been in the cool water at least 18 hours at most. Blunt force trauma to the skull, looks like. But she didn't die here. There's no blood in the water. No signs of struggle on the bank. Dumped, I'd say. Time of death around noon on the 16th, give or take. We'll get exacts from the autopsy back in Salt Lake City." One of his forensic techs, a young woman with a clipboard, nodded. "Body temp and lividity suggest she was moved post-mortem. The killer probably thought the canal would hide her longer." The divers hit the water soon after, combing the murky bed for a weapon or tool, maybe the blunt object that the killer used to do the deed. They surfaced empty-handed, except for a pair of driving gloves, after an hour of searching. "Nothing down there in the way of a murder weapon. Nothing but silt and trash," the lead diver reported to Dr. Ellis as he handed the gloves over to be bagged. "This site's isolated as hell. No wonder they picked it." Calvert, who'd been snapping authorized photos under the deputy's watchful eyes, approached Dr. Ellis with his laptop. "Doc, I've got the original shot here, enhanced versions too. Shows the reflection clear as day. If this helps, I'll send them to you." Dr. Ellis glanced at the screen, then at Calvert. "Journalist, huh? This could be key evidence. Send the file over to this address. We'll start chain of custody." He said it as he handed Calvert his card. "Glad to. And I will also put it on a thumb drive," he said while reaching into his camera bag. "Oh, by the way, I have this printed photo if you want it." "Yes, please, anything you've got. And since it looks like you're sticking around, we'll need your statement on the record. Officer Hicks, if you would, please." Calvert nodded, handed Dr. Ellis the print, the thumb drive, and said, "I sent a digital file of the photo to the sheriff's department earlier." He finished his statement, turned, and walked toward his car with a mix of grim satisfaction and adrenaline buzzing through him. His photo wasn't just a moody landscape anymore. It was eternal evidence, another notch in his well-worn belt of hard-hitting stories. Thoughts ran through his mind. Back home in Vaughn Orr, he cherished the quiet trails as a retreat from the big league chaos, but cases like this reminded him of why he stayed in the game. As he heard the body bag being zipped shut, Calvert couldn't shake the chill. Or the thought, who would kill a woman like Eliana, and why dump her on the road to Speed's holy ground? Chapter 3. The Investigation Begins. The case escalated to Detective Sophia Ramirez, a 35-year-old powerhouse in the Salt Lake City Police Department's homicide unit. Born and bred in Salt Lake City's West Side Barrios, Sophia had clawed her way up with a blend of grit and intellect, solving everything from drug ring hits to white-collar fraud. Armed with the evidence folder containing the original photo and a preliminary autopsy report, Sophia set out to work on the case. She was assigned to liaise with 2LA detective, Stan Gilmore. Given Eliana's city connections and her record, solving the murder was expected to be quick. Sophia hit the canal site by 10 a.m. on August 19, 2016, dressed in gray chino slacks, white blouse, and gray blazer, her out-of-place practical boots crunching the gravel as she eyed the scene. When Calvert, following his journalist's curiosity, arrived uninvited with his raw file still on his camera, Sophia's skepticism flared, colored by her big-city bias toward what she saw as a country bumpkin from some backwater holler. She had read his statement, but was not impressed. An out-of-towner with a camera happens to stumble on a body at a canal. Sure, it was what started our investigation, you being the Good Samaritan and all, but I don't need you in the mix, she snapped in the command trailer, her dark eyes boring into him as she demanded his ID and itinerary from the Knoxville flight, Delta 1247, arriving SLC at 1:45 p.m., to the Hertz rental, a gray Toyota Camry, plate UT40782JK. I assure you, ma'am, I'm an investigative photojournalist. I can be of some help. Vaughn Orr, Tennessee? What is that, some one stoplight town in the South where you all chase each other in pickup trucks, drink moonshine, and wrestle alligators? You expect me to allow a hayseed like you, who just happened to pull over for a pretty picture, caught a murderer's body dump, to now offer his help to me? Calvert, unfazed by the accusation, by the profiling, he'd heard worse covering Southern stock car feuds, leaned back with a slow grin, his East Tennessee drawl thickening for effect. Ma'am, Vaughn Orr's got more than moonshine. It's got lakes, mountains, and folks who know how to spot trouble from a mile away. Ain't my first rodeo with shady dealings. Check my background if you don't believe me. For one thing, I helped the TBI bust a cartel-funded racing team back east with nothing but photos and persistence. And for your information, there aren't any alligators in Tennessee. Sophia crossed her arms, a tech running the check anyway, her urban edge sharpening her words. Persistence? Sounds like meddling to me. There's a big difference between snapping pictures of rednecks, revving engines, and solving homicides in my city. But as the results rolled in, his 2012 expose on cartel-funded stock car race teams in Tennessee that aided the TBI, backed by damning photos, along with mention of other high-profile international investigations, her frost began to thaw. She eyed him anew, a hint of respect creeping in. All right, Shepard, maybe you're not just some country boy playing detective. Your small-town sleuthing methods might just pay off here. But one wrong move, and you're out of here. I don't want to have to explain to my captain why there is a journalist with a camera at my crime scene. Got it? Crystal clear, detective, Calvert replied. Now, let's see what, if any, race team members are involved in her death. Their partnership ignited. Sophia's procedural prowess meshed with Calvert's visual acuity and racing lore, propelling the probe into Wendover's casino-lit underbelly and the Salt Flats rivalries, though not without more banter between the two along the way. Chapter 4. The Dump Site Choice. The canal, a 20-mile hop west from Salt Lake City off I-80, suited a perpetrator versed in the Bonneville commute. Its isolated sign-posted banks, guarded by flood warnings and saline murk, promised obscurity in the Great Salt Lake's shadow. A 30 to 40 minute jaunt from Salt Lake City's racing garages, it let the killer merge into race traffic en route to Wendover's casinos, where teams like Eliana's partied post-prep. Sophia, using Calvert's geotagged digital photo, mapped the spot precisely, noting how the reflective water nearly erased the evidence. Smart choice for a dump, she admitted to Calvert at the site. Remote enough that even a city girl like me wouldn't wander here. You must be used to spots like this back in, what was it, Vanor? Vanor, he corrected with a chuckle. And yeah, we've got our share of hidden coves that hide secrets. Helps to know the terrain when you're tracking stories. Or bodies. Back at the bank of the canal where the body was found, Sophia said, whoever it was must have been in a hurry. But when I think about it, why here and not out in the desert away from any chance of discovery? The salt would preserve the body, not destroy it. Chapter 5. The Crime. Eliana's demise was no mere accident. It was a meticulously calculated act of cruelty, shrouded in the shadows of betrayal and high-stakes ambition. The autopsy rushed through under the sterile lights of the Salt Lake City morgue on August 18th by Dr. Gabe Ellis painted a harrowing picture of her final moments. The room was a cold, echoing chamber of stainless steel and harsh fluorescent hum, the faint metallic tang of blood mingling with the sharp bite of disinfectant. A sensory assault that made even seasoned investigators like Sophia Ramirez pause at the door. After entering and walking to the X-ray glaring on the wall, she heard Dr. Ellis's voice, steady but grave, as he detailed the horrors. The initial blow had come from a heavy, racing-grade torque wrench, its unforgiving metal crushing her skull with brutal precision, likely delivered in a fit of rage or cold deliberation. He turned from the X-ray on the wall, walked over to the exposed body laying on the cold table, picked up a cord, and continued. But death hadn't come swiftly. Strangulation followed, executed with a thin, high-tensile carbon fiber cord, the very kind used in parachute lines for those daring speed record attempts on the salt flats. The marks around her neck were deep, deliberate, suggesting a killer who savored the control, watching life ebb away inch by inch. After setting the cord down, he continued, adding to the horror. Her torso bore angry, blistering burns from superheated high-grade motor oil, the kind that spews from overworked engines in a racing garage. These weren't incidental. They screamed of torture, a sadistic prelude to the end, perhaps to extract secrets or simply to punish. Dr. Ellis noted the fluid's chemical composition matched high-performance racing blends, hinting at a kill site hidden among the pristine bays of a Salt Lake City-based racing workshop, maybe one with ties to the Bonneville teams, where the roar of engines could mask Eliana's screams. Her Salt Phantom jumpsuit, once a symbol of her team's cutting-edge prowess, was now a tattered relic, ripped at the seams from a desperate struggle, crusted with the distinctive white salt of the Bonneville flats that flaked off like accusation. Eliana's left hand, still clenched in a fist, was stuffed into the pocket of the jumpsuit. When Dr. Ellis removed the hand and opened the fist, he found a crumpled wrapper from a protein bar. Examination of stomach contents showed no traces of any protein bar, leading him to conclude the victim grabbed it during the struggle, for evidence. Tucked into a zippered pocket was her crumpled Bonneville Speedway access pass, and a folded note. A silent tether anchoring her fate to the chaotic circus of speed demons and dreamers converging on the vast, unforgiving, salt-laden expanse. As the implications sank in, the weight of the case pressed heavier on Detective Sophia Ramirez. Her mind raced with possibilities. Was this about a stolen design or something darker, like corporate espionage bleeding into murder? The burn suggests it's personal. Maybe vengeance, not just elimination. Back at the dump site, standing together with Calvert and Stan on the gravel road beside the Jordan Surplus Canal, where the body had been recovered just days prior, Sophia, case file in hand, gazed at the photo Calvert had captured. The power lines, battered by recent storms yet standing resilient, their wires humming faintly in the wind like whispered warnings. They echoed the scene's deceptive tranquility, a mirror to the undercurrents of danger lurking beneath. The canal's water lapped softly at the banks, but in Sophia's imagination, it hid more than reflections, perhaps discarded evidence the divers had missed, or the ghost of Eliana's final plea. Much like the teams out here, Sophia quipped, her voice laced with a mix of sarcasm and unease as they prepared for the drive to Wendover. Calm facades on the surface, but wired for explosion just waiting to ignite. "Wouldn't you agree, Stan?" Stan responded in a philosophical tone, "Yeah, I've been around these teams for years. Never seen it escalate to the point of killing, though. It makes you wonder." Calvert kicked at the loose gravel with a wry smile, though his mind churned. "She's right about the race teams, but if this ties back to the flats, we're walking into a viper's nest." "One wrong question, and we could spook the killer, or become the next target. Any ideas to motive yet?" he asked, his East Tennessee drawl masking the tension coiling in his gut. The air felt thicker now, charged with the unknown. Who among the racing elite could harbor such venom? He glanced at the dark water of the canal, half expecting a shadowy figure with hollow, questioning eyes to emerge, watching them. Sophia shook her head, her dark eyes scanning the horizon, as if the answers might materialize from the hazy Stansbury Mountains, or from the faint tire tracks still visible on the embankment. A red herring or a genuine lead? "Not at this time, but that's why we're heading to Wendover, to peel back the layers and unearth it. Most of the teams and their personnel are holed up there, gambling away their nerves in the casinos at night, while prepping for runs that could make or break fortunes during the day. It's a pressure cooker, Shepard. Rivalries fester, secrets simmer. One wrong word, one stolen design, and boom, someone snaps. Eliana might have uncovered something explosive, like stolen designs of her prototypes or black market deals disguised as sponsorship." "Do you have anyone in mind?" Calvert pressed, his journalist's intuition prickling. He could feel the suspense building, like the low rumble of an approaching storm over the salt flats. "I've compiled a preliminary list. Stan is in agreement," Sophia admitted, her tone dropping to a conspiratorial whisper as a distant semi-truck thundered by on I-80, oblivious to the macabre drama unfolding. "Three suspects top it for now, each with ties to Eliana, each with grudges that run deep." "What's their names?" Calvert asked with his notepad and pen ready. "Marcus Hale, the hot-headed crew chief whose team lost big because of her innovations. Lydia Kerr, her former protege with a chip on her shoulder the size of the Great Salt Lake, and Victor Lang, the shadowy financier who's got his fingers in too many pies." "Do you know where they are?" Calvert asked, eyeing Sophia. "Are we going in the right direction?" "They are all in Wendover, as of this morning," Stan said. "I've had eyes on them since we put the list together." "You're right, Stan, they're in Wendover at this very moment, blending into the crowd like wolves among sheep. But when we find them and bring them in, Calvert, you just need to remember I asked the questions. You observe. No heroics, no snapping pictures that could tip our hand. And watch your back. One of them might already know we're coming." "Understood, Detective Ramirez," Calvert replied, though his pulse quickened at the thought of what lay ahead. The neon-lit casinos hiding dark alliances, or a late-night confrontation that could turn deadly. "I'll follow you to Wendover. We can set up in my room at the Peppermill Casino Hotel. It's right in the thick of it." Sophia arched an eyebrow, a flicker of amusement cutting through the gravity, but her eyes betrayed a flicker of doubt. Was Calvert too eager or just the ally she needed? "That won't be necessary," she said. "The Tooele County Sheriff's Department has a local office near the casino. Stan's office is there, their lead on any investigation in their county. We'll play by the book, Shepard, but keep your eyes open. The killer might be watching us already." As they climbed into their vehicles, the sun dipped lower, casting long shadows over the canal that seemed to stretch like accusing fingers. Calvert couldn't shake the eerie sense that Eliana's death was just the tip of a larger conspiracy, one that could unravel the glittering facade of the Bonneville world. What secrets had she uncovered? And who among the initial list of suspects, Marcus Hale, Lydia Kerr, or Victor Lang, would crack first under the pressure if in fact one of them committed the murder? But then it occurred to him, what if it involved all three of them? Sophia may already be thinking the same thing. He would keep that thought to himself until Sophia had talked to each suspect separately. The drive to Wendover stretched ahead, fraught with anticipation, each mile drawing them closer to the heart of the storm. Calvert was not a novice when it came to danger during an investigation, but out here in the high-stakes Bonneville world, one misstep could mean the difference between justice or joining Eliana in an early grave. Chapter 6. Suspects, Racing Rivalry and Sabotage Focus. Sophia and Calvert dove into Bonneville's ecosystem, where egos and engines collided amid Wendover's neon haze. Eliana's airfoil breakthroughs had shattered records, sparking vendettas. They arrived at the 2L County Sheriff's satellite office next to the casino at 2 p.m. Detective Stan Gilmore, from this local office, led Sophia and Calvert to a cramped conference room where they laid out what little evidence they had so far. On a large whiteboard, Sophia displayed the three suspects, their suspected motive, and pertinent information on each, yet to be verified. Marcus Hale, 42, a rival team crew chief. His motive? Eliana's design snatched his crew's NASA prototype deal at 2014 Speed Week. Lingering evidence? They sparred at a Wendover casino bash on August 15th. His tow rig pinged on I-80 at 1 p.m. on the 16th. Volatile at best, he was a casino regular. Lydia Kerr, 35, Eliana's ex-apprentice turned competitor. Her motive? Eliana nicks Lydia's solo run as risky, torpedoing her most promising sponsorship. Lingering evidence? There was a tense garage clash in Salt Lake City in the early morning on August 15th. Her alibi for the time of the murder was shaky. Bonneville Flat scouting competition. Her SUV's tire tread fit the canal tracks. Victor Lang, 50, enigmatic financier backing Lydia's startup team. His motive? Eliana unearthed his race, fixing for personal gains. Lingering evidence? Threat at August 15th briefing. One of his personal drivers, Milo Gambeni, identified by a Utah State trooper, loitered canalside pre-crime in an SUV, masked as taking a leak. Clues from Calvert's photo and the scene. Drag marks in the gravel down to water edge matching heel size of Eliana, shoe prints in mud near water. Tire treads later align with race team SUVs. Protein bar litter, alien to Eliana, but found in her clenched fist stuffed into her jumpsuit pocket. Marcus's hall staple for Calvert's casino eavesdropping. Pocket scrawl in a folded note. Design flaw reflections distort the truth, along with design sheet number. Racing deceit. Sophia saw a clue. Calvert tied it to speed lingo. Sounds like something we'd say about a bad turn on the track back home. Driving glove grit. Found on gloves recovered from canal. Bonneville salt plus oil. Pointing to mid-drive kill site. Canal's water not in Eliana's lungs. Cord from around victim's neck identified as parachute cord. Chapter 7. The conspiracy unravels. The neon pulse of Wendover's casinos throbbed like a migraine as Sophia Ramirez paced the cramped conference room of the 2L County Sheriff's satellite office, a squat brick outpost wedged between the Peppermill's glitzy facade and a dusty RV park teeming with Bonneville stragglers. It was August 20, 2016, the day after Speed Week officially wrapped on the Salt Flats. The courses had closed Friday amid a frenzy of final runs and record attempts, but the pits and casinos still buzzed with stragglers, teams packing rigs, and the afterglow of a successful return to racing after years of weather woes. Inside, the whiteboard was a battlefield of scribbled timelines, suspect photos pinned like wanted posters, and Calvert Shepard's enhanced canal shot looming large. Its ghostly reflection now a Rosetta Stone for the case. Sophia jabbed a marker at the board, circling Victor Lang's name in red. It's him, Stan. The financier's got the means, the access, and that smug yacht club alibi that doesn't hold water. Eliana was digging into his race-fixing racket, threatened to blow it wide open at that briefing. He panics, lures her to a quiet spot off the flats, and bashes her skull in with whatever heavy thing a rich prick like him keeps in his SUV. The rest? Smoke. Marcus is muscle without brains. Lydia's a bitter has-been chasing shadows. Stan nodded in agreement, offering no better option. Calvert leaned against the wall, arms crossed over his faded Tennessee Vols hoodie, his laptop balanced on a folding chair like a reluctant witness. He'd spent the morning cross-referencing GPS pings from race team trackers pulled from public Bonneville logs, with the faint tire impressions Sophia's forensic team had lifted from the canal embankment. The data didn't line up with a solo hit. Detectives, you're barking up the wrong tree. Victor's slick, sure, but he ain't the type to get his hands dirty with a torque wrench. Look at the autopsy, those burns from the hot oil. That's garage work, up close and personal. And Lydia's SUV treads match location of the drag marks, but her alibi's got holes you could drive a streamliner car through. Marcus? He's the blunt instrument, yeah, but he doesn't move alone. This feels like a relay race gone bloody, all three passing the baton, covering tracks. I can smell it like moonshine on a bootlegger's breath. Sophia shot him a withering glare, her dark ponytail swinging like a pendulum as she capped the marker with a snap. Your smell it routine is cute, Shepard, but we're not in Vonor chasing moonshiners. This is my case, stands in my jurisdiction, and I'm not chasing fairy tales of a three-headed monster when one's got the fangs. We've got enough to haul them in, separately. You? You're a witness, not a badge. Sit this one out, or I'll have a local deputy escort your country ass back to the buffet line. Understood, detective. I'll stay out of your way. Sophia looked at him, knowing he would not stay put. But if you go off on your own, let me know where. Calvert's jaw tightened, but he held his tongue, the southern steel in his eyes flashing like Tellico Lake under a storm. Fair enough. But if I'm right, you'll need more than words on a board. I'll scout the pits, see if any ghosts are whispering. He grabbed his camera bag and laptop, the door clicking shut behind him with a finality that echoed his gut-deep certainty. Sophia was sharp as a switchblade, but she was playing checkers in a chess game. And Calvert? He'd always been better at reading the shadows in a frame. Outside, the desert wind whipped grit against his rental Camry as he merged into the chaotic exodus from the salt flats, trailers hauling gutted engines, racers nursing sunburns and shattered dreams. His mind replayed the pocket scrawl from Eliana's jumpsuit. Design flaw reflections distort the truth. It wasn't poetry, it was a breadcrumb, laced with racing jargon for a botched high-speed illusion. Wendover wasn't just a pit stop, it was a web of back-alley garages and pop-up workshops where teams tweaked designs under casino spotlights. If the body dump after the kill had happened en route, the prelude, the torture, the blow to the head, the strangulation with a cord, had to be close. Somewhere the roar of I-80 could drown screams, and the Nevada line offered a quick dump across state borders. He parked the car behind the Rainbow Casino, a quieter sibling to the Peppermill, and slipped into the service alley, snaking behind the strip. His boots scattered discarded betting slips as he followed a hunch. Eliana's Salt Phantom team had booked overflow space in a nondescript large metal workshop off Wendover Boulevard, a neutral tuning shop shared with rivals to cut costs during the event. The GPS metadata from her last social media check-in, stamped 11:45 a.m. on the 16th, mid-commute, ping within a half mile. Calvert's pulse quickened. It fit the timeline, a frantic window before the canal drop. He went back to his car and sought out the coordinates. The workshop loomed like a metal ghost under the midday sun, its roll-up doors down and locked, indicating no one inside. A no trespassing sign on the door cautioned entry, but the sideman door hung ajar, careless or inviting. He edged inside, camera at the ready. The cavernous space, a labyrinth of expensive toolboxes, half-assembled chassis, discarded parts, tool benches with wrenches laid out in surgical order, and oil drums stacked like silent sentinels. The air was thick, stale, laced with something sharper, the faint burnt smell of motor oil, masked by solvent cleaners but unmistakable, to a man who'd spent many hours in race team garages back home. His flashlight beam danced over the shiny concrete floor, catching a scuff mark near a workbench, a drag trail smeared and hastily hosed, leading to a floor drain crusted with reddish-brown residue. Heart hammering, Calvert knelt, tracing the path, he noticed the glint of a carbon fiber cord spool tucked under the workbench, its end pinched slightly as if cut with side cutters in haste. There, on the floor at the workbench, a spill of fresh motor oil, still clean from shop dust, possibly matching the oil used to make the severe burns on Eliana's torso. High-grade synthetic, the kind that hit 300 degrees under Bonneville loads. Above the spill on the workbench sat a hot plate with a pot setting on its surface, still giving off the scent of burnt motor oil. But it was the wall next to the roll-up door that stopped him cold, a shadowed corner, where a smudged bloodstain stood out inside an outline as if something heavy, a body, had slumped against it, leaving a faint, smeared outline in the dust. "This is it," he whispered, southern drawl gone husky with adrenaline. "A kill site. Not the canal's cold dump, but this shared garage space revealing the possibility of a fatal encounter, where betrayal boiled over amid the clatter of speed." He raised his camera, framing the scene with clinical precision, the drag marks, the cord, the oil stain, the wall's ghostly silhouette. Click. The shutter's whisper captured it all. The raw, unfiltered truth, reflections undistorted for once. He fired off a burst from three angles, metadata stamping the GPS 40.731N minus 114.032W, right in Wendover's underbelly. No time for subtlety. Calvert bolted outside, thumbing his phone to Sophia's direct line. Detective, it's Shepard. You want your smoking gun? I've got the location where Eliana bled out. A shared team garage off Boulevard, 10 minutes from the Peppermill. Drag marks, oil, blood, the works. I've taken a series of photo, being careful not to contaminate the scene. I'm sending them to you as we speak. There's nobody here now. Send forensics before team members show up and start cleaning for the next round of tweaks. Sophia's voice crackled through, laced with reluctant fire. Damn it, Shepard. You're a pain in my ass. We can't use your evidence. You trespassed. I'll get a warrant before sending units en route. Get out of that building now, but stay put. Stay out of the way until Stan and I get there. He didn't. Instead, he lingered in the alley's shadow, watching as two L cruisers screamed up, lights slicing the haze. The forensic van rolled in 15 minutes later, Tex in Tyvek suits swarming the garage like ants on a carcass. One of them, a lanky kid with a camera and evidence kit, waved him over. Shepard, Detective Ramirez said your shots are good, but I have to duplicate them now that a warrant was issued. That wall smear? Preliminary luminols lighting up like Vegas. Blood, fresh transfer. We're pulling samples. Calvert nodded, a grim satisfaction settling in his chest as the team dusted for prints and bagged the cord. His photos, emailed in real time, had cracked the facade. Proof the murder wasn't a lone wolf's frenzy, but an orchestrated hit in the heart of the Speedway's chaos. By the time Sophie arrived, blazer rumpled and eyes stormy, the garage was a taped-off hive, and Calvert's images were already syncing to the forensic photos taken by the tech to be later added to the case file. You were right about the site, she admitted through gritted teeth, clipboard in hand as a tech briefed her on the finds. But don't get to thinking this ties them all together. This ties Victor's fleet plates, caught on camera, to an unknown loiter outside at 11:30 a.m. He's the planner. The others? Accomplices at best. Calvert met her gaze, unflinching. Or all in the deep end together, ma'am. Wait till you sweat 'em. The truth don't hide forever. She huffed, turning toward her car and heading back to the office with Stan. Interrogations start now. Hale first, then Kerr, Lang last. Your bench, Shepard. Go nurse a coffee. If your pictures hold after we match them with forensic photos, maybe I'll buy you another one. After we make an arrest and try to convince a judge, as a journalist you volunteered the photos, and did not compromise the crime scene. It's happened in the past, he said. As the suspects were rounded up, Marcus hauled from a slots bank looking like a thundercloud, Lydia from a flat scouting run with defiance in her eyes, Victor from a private jet pad with lawyers in tow, Calvert slipped into the Peppermill's dim lounge, camera heavy on his lap. The twist was unraveling thread by bloody thread, a conspiracy forged in rivalry's fire, where designs weren't just stolen, they were buried with their creator. But who swung the wrench? And as the casino's slots chimed like mocking laughter, Calvert wondered if the real rush was the speed on the salt, or the killer's next desperate move. Outside, the desert wind carried echoes of engines cooling down for the season. The salt had delivered in 2016, but the real story was the one he'd just helped close. Chapter 8. The Pressure Cooker. The Tooele County Sheriff's satellite office smelled of burnt coffee, the scent of tobacco smoke baked into the wood paneling and the fabric of the American flag in the corner, and the overwhelming scent of bureaucracy that no amount of industrial cleaner could erase. Fluorescent lights buzzed overhead like trapped insects, casting harsh shadows across the scuffed linoleum. Three interview rooms lined the narrow hallway, each a windowless box with a metal table bolted to the floor, a one-way mirror, and a single chair that looked too small for comfort. Sophia Ramirez moved like a storm front, sleeves rolled to her elbows, badge glinting under the lights. She had separated them deliberately, Marcus Hale first in room one, Lydia Kerr cooling her heels in room two, Victor Lang last in room three with his expensive suit and sharper lawyer already pacing outside. No collusion, no whispered alibis, just the slow grind of isolation. Calvert Shepard sat in the observation booth between rooms one and two, arms folded, camera bag at his feet like a loyal dog. Sophia had barred him from the interview rooms. You're a witness, not a cop. But she'd left the feed live on the monitors, a concession wrapped in warning. Watch, don't speak. And if I need your eyes on something, you'll know. Marcus Hale entered room one like a bull shoved into a chute, 6'3", shoulders that strained his team polo, hands cuffed loosely in front because he hadn't fought yet. He dropped into the chair with a thud that rattled the table legs. Sophia entered opposite him, file folder slapping down like a gauntlet. "Mr. Hale," she began, voice low and even, the way a blade slides from its sheath. "You know why you're here." Marcus stared at the table, jaw working like he was chewing glass. "Eliana." "Yeah." "Tragic. She was brilliant." "It's a real shame." Sophia leaned in, palms flat on the metal. "Shame's one word for it. Another is murder. Blunt force strangulation. Burns from racing oil hot enough to blister skin. You were in Wendover that day. Your tow rig pinged I-80 right around the time she vanished. And your protein bar wrapper was found near the body. Same brand, same wrapper, crinkled in her pocket like an afterthought." Marcus's eyes flicked up, dark and flat. "Lots of guys eat those. Keeps the blood sugar steady when you're wrenching all night." "Convenient," Sophia said as she opened the folder and slid a photo across. The canal reflection, Calvert's picture, zoomed to show the drag marks and the faint outline of boot treads. "These match your size 13. And the oil? High-grade synthetic, same as the spill we just pulled from the shared garage off Boulevard. The one your team used for overflow tuning. You were there at 11:30 a.m. Witnesses saw your rig parked crooked, blocking the roll-up door." Marcus's knuckles whitened. A vein throbbed at his temple. "I was tuning suspension. Eliana stopped by. We argued. Same old shit. She stole our NASA prototype edge in 14. Cost me everything. But arguing ain't killing." Sophia's voice dropped softer, almost intimate. "She found out about Victor's side deals, didn't she? The race fixing, the black market parts. You were his fixer, muscle. She threatened to go public at the briefing. You couldn't let that happen." Marcus laughed, short and bitter. "You think I swung a torque wrench? I'm a mechanic, not a psycho." "Then who did?" Sophia pressed, leaning closer until their faces were inches apart across the table. "Because someone did. And the carbon cord? From your parachute stash. The burns? Your garage. The dump? Your route back to the casino where you sat at slots for 3 hours building an alibi. Cute. But we have luminol lighting up that garage wall like a crime scene Christmas tree. Blood transfer? Hers." Marcus's breathing hitched. He looked away, stared at the mirror as if he could see through it to Calvert. Sweat beaded on his upper lip. I didn't mean for it to go that far. She came at me, screaming about designs, about Victor. Pushed me. I grabbed the wrench just to scare her. She lunged. It connected hard. The room went still. Sophia didn't blink. "Keep going." Marcus swallowed. "She went down, bleeding. I panicked. Called Victor. He said he would handle it. Lydia showed up, said she'd watch the door. I wrapped the cord around her neck, but I did not finish her. About that time, Victor showed. Made me get Lydia's SUV and back it inside. I didn't see what he did to Eliana. Then we hauled her out. Thought the salt canal would take care of the rest." Sophia straightened slowly. "You strangled her after the blow?" Marcus nodded once, eyes glassy. "Yeah, I started to do it. Victor said no loose ends. But then he showed up. Lydia drove the SUV. Suggested the canal. I rode with her. I dumped her body at dusk. We drove back to the casino." In the booth, Calvert's jaw clenched. It fit, almost, but the timeline nagged. The burns were deliberate, sadistic. Torture before the kill. Marcus was rage, not cruelty. He glanced at the feed to room two, where Lydia Kerr sat rigid, fingers drumming a silent rhythm on the table. Sophia exited room one, nodding to Stan. She crossed to room two without pause. Lydia looked up as Sophia entered, cool, composed, but her eyes were red-rimmed, pupils dilated. "This is harassment, detective. I want my lawyer." Sophia sat, crossed her legs. "You can have your lawyer, but first you just listen. Marcus just rolled. Said you suggested the canal as the dump site. Drove the body in your SUV. Tire treads match. And you were the one who nixed her own solo run, killed your sponsorship, She didn't ruin you, but you blamed her and wanted to help ruin her. Lydia's laugh was thin, brittle. Marcus is lying to save his own skin. Okay. Are you waiving your right to counsel? Yes, I am. I argued with Eliana, yes. She blocked my shot at the record books. But murder! I'm an engineer, not a thug. Then explain the oil burns, Sophia said quietly. They weren't from an accident. Someone poured it, slowly, while she was alive. Screaming, probably. You were her protege. You knew her fears. Not only that, but you knew exactly how to break her. Lydia's drumming stopped. Her hands curled into fists. She betrayed me, took credit for my airfoil tweaks, left me scraping for scraps while she got the glory. But I didn't burn her. I just watched the door. Made sure no one came in. Sophia leaned forward. Watched while who did what? Lydia's gaze darted to the mirror. Victor called the shots. Marcus did the dirty work. I just kept lookout, told myself it was quick. But the oil, that was Victor's idea. Said she needed to feel what betrayal really cost. I've told you everything. Can I go now? The air in the booth thickened. Calvert leaned closer to the monitor, pulse hammering. The piece is locked. Victor planned it. Marcus executed. Lydia enabled. A perfect triangle of motive and means. Sophia rose. Voice ice. It doesn't matter if you've told everything, and no, you're staying here. She moved to room 3. Victor Lang waited, legs crossed, lawyer at his side like a guard dog. He smiled thinly, spreading his hands out, palms up, as Sophia entered. Detective. This is dramatic. Why am I here? Sophia dropped the folder hard on the table. Photos spilled. The garage. The blood smear. The cord. Calvert's enhanced photos from the shared garage. Your SUV at the canal. Your corporate financing. Your orders. Marcus confessed. Lydia confirmed. You orchestrated it all because Eliana was about to expose your syndicate. The fixing. The graft. The corporate crony kickbacks disguised as sponsorship. Victor's smile faltered. Just a flicker. Circumstantial. My clients will... Your clients will hang you out to dry, Sophia cut in. We have forensic matches. Blood, oil, prints on the cord spool. And the burns? Your signature move for what? Control. You didn't just kill her. You made her suffer. For secrets? For pride? Victor stared at the photos. The lawyer started to speak. Victor raised a hand, silencing him. She was going to ruin everything, he said quietly. I gave her the world. She turned on my generosity, so I ended it. Marcus swung first. Rage made the man sloppy. I finished it first with the oil. That was personal, then with the cord. She needed to understand loss. Silence stretched, taut as wire. Sophia stood. I'll take that as a confession. We're done here. You're done. Officer, arrest this man and the other two as well. Charge them all with murder in the first degree. She stepped into the hall. The tension snapped like a breaking line. Marcus's raw confession, Lydia's trembling admission, Victor's cold precision in the final moments of Eliana's life. They formed a chain, each link forged in betrayal. Calvert met her eyes through the glass. She gave a single nod, acknowledgement, not thanks. In the fluorescent hum, the case closed. Not with a bang, but with the quiet click of cuffs and the slow exhalation of three killers realizing the rush had ended. Here, the salt flats glittered under casino lights, hiding nothing anymore. Calvert shouldered his bag, ready to turn his attention to what was left of the last day of Speed Week. The photos inside having started and helped end the search for Eliana's killers. With the killers now in custody, Sophia gathers her case file material, leaves the local sheriff's office, and heads toward her car, ready to make her way back to Salt Lake City. Calvert walked out behind Sophia and stopped at her car to say goodbye. Sophia, you closed the case in what I suspect is in record time. Congratulations. It was satisfying to watch you work. Thanks, Calvert. For you being a country hayseed with a camera and a pain in the ass, your help was welcome, she said with a grin. Are you on your way back to Von Ohr? Not yet. The race is over. This is cleanup day for Speed Week. I'm going to the flats and the pits to get team member responses for the story I came here for, then home. They parted knowing that the odds of them ever working together again was next to none. But who knows, a friendship did get kindled.